After 12 years fighting in the desert combat zones in Kuwait, Baghdad and Kandahar, he reached finally the greatest of all battles of humans, the battle within himself. John Lawyer transformed from a soldier to a spiritual seeker. And now he reached there, and what it took him to overcome his past is something he will share with us today. Welcome to another fantastic episode of The Small Reset. Again with a great guest, with a unique story. Welcome, John Lawyer.
Thank you so much for having me on. I love your show and I appreciate the message that you're putting out in the world.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you. So, John, tell us a little bit about your story. And let's start with the first part of your life. So how did you grow up and how did you get finally to the military?
Yeah, I had a pretty normal childhood. I grew up in central Oklahoma, a small town, about 8,000 people. Happy childhood. I had a sister, an older sister, two parents. And then as I got older, my family kind of split apart. My mom and dad got divorced. My sister went off to college. And so I guess my high school years were kind of more turbulent. And so that was kind of defining a little bit. But school was never really for me. It wasn't something that I was interested in a whole lot. So I knew I wasn't going to go to college, but I wanted to go around the world. I wanted to kind of be in the intelligence community. And I had watched Lawrence of Arabia and wanted to go to the Middle East. And so I joined the Army straight out of high school. This is prior to 9/11, so about a year before 9/11. And by the time I got done with my training, I became a counterintelligence special agent in the U.S. Army. And by the time I got to my first like permanent base, it was about 6 months before the war started. And so that kind of happened and changed my life.
But you just said you had this desire to go to the Middle East already before you joined the Army. Is that correct?
So that's right.
Where did that come from? Just because of curiosity or...?
It was curiosity. I mean, I was interested in counterterrorism. I was interested in why, like, Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden were doing what they were doing. You know, the first World Trade Center bombing had really kind of had an impact on me as a younger child. And, you know, the East Africa bombings that had happened in the late 90s. And like I said, I watched Lawrence of Arabia. And so it fascinated me. I was kind of drawn to the desert, like on a base level.
Right.
And so it just ended up being, it did end up being, be careful what you wish for, one of those kind of situations, because the universe will send you what you ask. So.
Yeah. I mean, I love also the desert. I love being in the desert, but yeah. I couldn't imagine to live there for many, many years. I like it for traveling. But good. Okay. And then you went to there. I said already you were in Iraq and Kuwait and all those places, right? So, and I think you wrote in your intro, like 12 years you stayed in all these war zones. So how,
yeah.
How did that influence your life and how did that shape your story?
It had a big influence on me. It was, you know, I really liked my job. I was good at it and I threw myself into it completely. And so I was working 110 hours a week for almost years at a time. Out of the first 15 years of my adult life, I spent 12 of those years, in combat zones. And it was about 2.5 years in Kuwait, about a year and a half in Baghdad, and then about 6.5 consecutive years in Kandahar with some other time here and there. But it was a situation where it's kind of like when, you know, you get into like maybe like a pot of water and it's just room temperature. So it's fine. But then it starts to get hotter and hotter and hotter. Right. And then you realize suddenly, eventually years later, you're in this boiling pot of water. That's kind of what it was for me. I think like I was so involved in what I did with my job. And so like focused, like you don't realize like the trauma and like the toll it's taking on you, you know? So, you know, fast forward 15 years through all that, when I finally came home, I was pretty busted up from a physical point, from a mental point, emotionally. And I also didn't have an identity outside of my job because that's all I did. I didn't really have free time or hobbies or anything. I just worked all the time. And I was focused on doing counterterrorism and asymmetric warfare and counterintelligence. And so when I got home after all those years, I kind of had an identity crisis because I didn't really know who I was. And I knew I needed to heal, but I didn't know how to do that, you know?
Yeah, right. And that would have been my next question. Yeah, well, how did you feel when you came home? And I think, I mean, for me, and I, if you allow me to ask a question, how old are you?
I am 42 right now.
42, yeah. So we're almost same age. I'm 46, so a little older. But yeah, so I mean, okay, for you, it sounds normal for me, growing up in Germany, right, we never were really exposed to war or something. It was, at least if you stayed at home, it was a quite peaceful time, and war was something you maybe seen so on television or read in the newspaper, right. But you were not really closely exposed to that, right? So, yeah, how does this make you feel when you're coming back? And then it's a completely different world, right? And
completely different. I mean, for me, the whole world had changed. Like, right. Even cars were different, right? Like, I had been overseas so long that, like, everything had changed. Like, the whole world had changed around me. And so I felt like a stranger. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, people don't talk about it a lot. There's a few people that have talked about it. Like, Sebastian Younger talked about it in one of his TED Talks. But when you're at war for so long, you get addicted to it. Like, you get addicted to the adrenaline. Like, there's physiological changes that happen in your brain and, like, you know, in with your amygdala and how your body processes chemicals and stuff. And so it's like I was, when I came home, I was seeing the world in kind of this really monotone, fuzzy, gray sort of way, because I was used to kind of being plugged in all the time to this, like, really energizing, exciting thing. And that's kind of hard to come to terms with when you realize, oh, well, I was addicted to war. And then that, you feel bad about that because it's this kind of hard thing. And I think that also the longer I was in that military industrial complex, the longer I was at war, the more you realize the human toll, not just on yourself or your brothers and sisters in arms, but you start to realize that the enemy is not really the enemy, that they're just trying to live their lives and do their thing. And so you start to realize this machine just eats everyone up. It eats the friendly people up, the quote unquote friendly people, the quote unquote enemy. And then obviously the civilians that get caught in the middle. So you realize this machine is kind of this dark thing that it might do a lot of good in the world at times, but it also has this very dark, destructive power.
Yeah, I think you're completely right, and thank you very much for sharing that here. Right, I think it's great to have such an open conversation. I really appreciate that. So, okay, so now you came back from the war and you were facing all these different realities. So we know today you're something different, right? So how did you get on this spiritual path, and how long did it take you to get there? I mean, how did you overcome this? Let's call it maybe traumas or maybe this different realities. How did that?
Yeah. Go? Well, I went to the American VA, which helps veterans, and they helped me some. I got paired with a therapist who had kind of randomly, she was involved in studying like Eastern practices and stuff like that. So she taught me mindfulness, some things like that. It wasn't stuff that at the time I was able to completely wrap myself around, because it was too abstract for where I was in life. But I think it started things kind of in motion in my head. And so I wasn't really on a spiritual path. And so it took time. I was probably kind of just wandering around a little bit aimlessly for probably about 7 years, because I had PTSD and hypervigilance and depression and anxiety, all this stuff. And it came to a point where I said to myself, I'm too attached to my past. I'm too attached to what's happening tomorrow. And so I let go and surrendered a bit. And it was kind of a spiritual thing, but at the time I didn't realize that. It was just me trying to take care of myself and say, I have to let go. And I think that was a big step. And so I still wasn't on a quote unquote spiritual path at that time. And I would say 2 or 3 or 4 more years passed. And then I was in bed one night with my wife. She was asleep and it was late. And I kind of had this moment of profound understanding of the universe, or clarity. People call it an awakening. And the universe just kind of made sense to me, where, like, we're all connected, we're all one. I felt in the moment like we're all saying very similar things from different religions and spiritual philosophies and all this stuff. So I felt like, how come we can't better communicate with each other, you know? And so that moment was foundational for me. It completely changed my life. I knew what my higher purpose was, my dharma, that I was, you know, meant to help people kind of help themselves. And maybe I could help people get through stuff that I'd gone through, because I feel like no trauma is better or worse than any other trauma, right? It's all equal. And that's what I started to do with my life. I knew that I would like to start an online nonprofit spiritual community, and that's what I wanted to do from here on out. So that's what I did. I worked every day after that to kind of try to make that happen.
Good. Okay, before we get into your new task, just coming back to what you said in the first years you were not in the spiritual path, but you said you just had to let go. So can you explain this a little bit, this process of letting go?
Yeah, I realized that I was invested in my past in a very like deep way. And I was invested in what may or may not happen in the future. And it was causing tremendous anxiety for me. And it was overwhelming. It had gotten to the point where it was overwhelming. It was in some ways it was worse than even the early days when I had just come back from overseas. And so I said to myself, you've got to just stop caring. And it wasn't just, I still wanted to live, but I decided that I had to stop caring about almost everything. And it was this transformational thing that enabled me to at least have more peace with myself. And at the time it was done, I was doing it in kind of a logical way. Like it was almost like I was just applying logic to how can I not be as messed up as I've been. I think it was spiritual. I just didn't know it.
Okay. You know? Yeah, I mean, it just depends how you define spiritual, right? I think for me, spirituality is like basically finding the way to yourself and understanding yourself. And
absolutely.
Finding the truth in yourself, right? So, okay, so now you're letting... So would you say it was like a forgiving to yourself? You forgave yourself or something like
that? Yeah, there was... I think I love that question because I think when we let go... Mm-hmm. I think releasing ourselves in forgiveness and others and also judgment of ourselves and others. I think those two things are critical in that process of letting go.
Right. And the other thing you said, which I think is quite interesting, and I used to be also like that. I'm an engineer. So many years, you know, we're trying to explain things only logically, right? We try to catch it with our mind and with our putting together A plus B is whatever.
Right.
So one and one is two. But usually it doesn't work always like that, right? Especially in complex things like our life, right? So I would agree there's more to that. Okay, interesting. So what do you believe in now? I mean, what is your idea? You say you understand the universe and everything, and so what's your thoughts on that?
So at a higher level, like at an upper level, I call myself an omnist or universalist, which basically means I respect all religions, philosophical constructs and spiritual constructs. Within that, I have a strong desire to know as much as I can about people from all around the world and across time, like so that I can understand what religion means to other people so that I can help that inform my own practice. I have an affinity for Hinduism, like the more universal aspects of it, like just the idea of the universal Brahman and some of the meditative yoga practices are fundamental in how I practice Taoism and that balance between light and dark. But the fact that we're kind of the way in the middle and we're walking that balanced path in the middle is important to me. Mm-hmm. And then some indigenous and pagan beliefs from around the world really speak to me. And I don't necessarily practice those indigenous face, but they again inform kind of how I see the world and see myself and see the universe. And I would say that I'm a pantheist. I believe that we are all connected. We are all kind of this one universal thing. So I have that kind of universal view.
And I think that's beautiful because, right, I mean, because, yeah, in the end, you say it correctly, right? Most of the religions, at least in their core values and core beliefs, they're more or less the same, right? I mean, in terms of ethics and everything, right? And it's like, I mean, Immanuel Kant said it. I mean, where the knowledge stops, where we stop with our knowledge, right there, the belief starts, and everybody should be free to believe what they want. Now, basically, I mean, I see two problems that we have today. So one is that, I mean, there are especially, I wouldn't say many, but there are a lot of powerful people that are fundamentalistic about or dogmatic about their belief and want to force others to believe them. That's one problem I see in the world today. The other one is that, many people, they don't have this belief anymore. So they're just trying to explain everything by logic and by science and whatever, right? So, which is also lead to some, maybe some personal or individual confusion. So what's your thoughts on this two things?
No, that's a really good question. I love that. I think when it comes from when we think about the people out there who don't believe in spirituality or religion or that more esoteric metaphysical side of things. I think science in and of itself is almost a spiritual idea. I don't think that science can save us, first of all. I think I'm a huge believer in science. I think it's great. I think it's moving us in places that are amazing. But I don't think that science by itself will save us. I always go back to Max Planck. He's the father of quantum physics. And I forget the exact quote, but he says that, you know, science knows that consciousness exists. Everything they see, everything that they know postulates consciousness. But they can't prove it. They can't solve it. But that matter probably sits on top of consciousness. And so I think if you're a scientist or an atheist or on that side of things, you can look at things like what consciousness is, how that impacts science, just the fact that when we observe an experiment, we're potentially changing the outcome of that experiment. I think we can look at things and say, that's a very spiritual thing, a metaphysical thing, where science kind of meets the other side. So, and for everybody else, like you said, we're all saying very similar things. When I had my kind of awakening moment, since I wasn't consciously on a spiritual path, I didn't understand a lot of the vocabulary or the different religions around the world. And so I felt compelled to go learn. And I think I read 60 books in 4 months, and that's all I did. I read just for hours a day. And
that's plenty.
Yeah. I was struck in all my notes and all of the quotes and everything that they're saying such similar things, whether it's Greek philosophy or it's Hinduism or it's Christianity. At a base level, it's really so similar.
Yeah, just the stories are a little different, right? The characters are different.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, and I also agree with what you said about science. I mean, I think science is very useful to, like, to explain things and to develop things, like, right, to have applied scientists. I mean, you're talking about Max Planck, but or also Einstein. I mean, Einstein proved Newton was wrong, right? But still, Newton's law, I can use them today. I mean, if I want to calculate how long it takes the egg to fall on the floor and to break, it's still useful, right? For that, I don't need to go to whatever relativity theory for that. Good. Okay, so you mentioned something on your profile. You're talking about the stream of unconsciousness. Can you explain us what you mean by that?
Yeah, I think this is a really important thing, that there's this idea, you know, when we're growing up, from the time we're young children, we're told all of this stuff that we have to do or we cannot do, or that we have to meet this goal and take this path and meet these milestones in life. And we're told this by our parents and by our teachers and by our friends and coworkers and our community. And I feel like this, I call it the stream of unconsciousness, because it's this stream that pulls us down this predetermined, like, conveyor belt that is not a story that we're writing for ourselves. It's a story that's been written for us by all these people and by all these organizations and entities. So the stream of unconsciousness is this, it could be warm, it can be comfortable, it can be easy. But if we just stand up out of it, we can become aware and look around and see all these vibrant colors. And then we can decide, what are my values? What are my beliefs outside of all this stuff that I've been told and outside of this story that's been written for me?
So how do you find your old beliefs in all the sea of like social media and parents and friends that are influencing us?
Yeah. I love that question, because that's a really esoteric question, right? How do I find my own beliefs? And I think that comes down to, look at everything the world has to offer. There's all these teachings out there on spirituality, religion, philosophy, even science. So look at it all. See what resonates with you. The certain things are going to kind of resonate with us in better ways. And even within specific religions, whether it's the Buddha or Jesus Christ or whoever, they've probably said the same thing 20 different times in 20 different ways, because you never know what's going to connect with someone. So I would say, go out and explore what's available and decide what works for you. Decide what speaks to you and embrace that. That's how you can kind of build your values and beliefs. And within that, there's this idea of, I believe we each have our own higher purpose in this universe. So, like, my higher purpose won't be your higher purpose. So like, what's your unique higher purpose or dharma that you're meant to live? And if you don't know that, discover it. And if you discover it, figure out, is that aligned with how I'm living my life? Is it aligned with my job? Is it aligned with my hobbies and my family and my relationships?
I love this answer. I think it's great. I think it's exactly right. Good. And you're also saying you're open to the universe. What do you mean by that?
I think that people talk, there's a lot of talk in popular culture and popular spirituality about the law of attraction or manifestation or the secret or whatever you want to call it, right? But I do believe that the, you know, what, or prayer, just Christian prayer or Muslim prayer or whatever, or any religion's prayer. When we ask the universe for something, generally it will send it to you. The universe is responsive. But the thing is, if we're not open to the universe, we might not see or catch what's coming at us as what we ask for, because it could look completely different. And so when we're open to the universe, when we're kind of in this receive mode, you know, it's, we're going to have a much greater chance of kind of moving with that motion of the universe and receiving what it sends us in a way that is going to give us what we need.
Absolutely. I would also agree. I don't like personally the term law of attraction, because I don't think it works like that, because I think it's also a lot of mentally that we, you know, yeah, like a self-fulfilling prophecy that if you,
I think you have to meet the universe halfway. You've got to go meet the universe halfway.
Probably, yeah. Probably half and half.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't just happen, right?
Right. That's true. Yeah. There are always different factors that are coming in, right? But I think,
yeah, absolutely,
I see it like that, that I can only work on myself. So I'm doing my best and trying my best, and the rest will come as it should.
Absolutely.
Good. Okay, so tell us a little bit about your project, the Kishar community, right?
Kishar is our spiritual community. It's named after the Sumerian goddess of Mother Earth, kind of like Gaia. And it also represents the line on the horizon, which I think kind of beautifully encapsulates that journey that we're all on. And so the community itself is designed to help people explore their spiritual path, that journey that we're all on, and to share it with others. And to do it in a non-dogmatic way, to do it in a way that empowers each individual to believe what they need to believe for themselves. And so if I believe in X, Y, and Z, and you believe in A, B, and C, we should still be able to stand or sit next to each other, have a conversation about it, and be in a community, because I believe there's room for authentic, meaningful connection in the digital age. Just like you and I are having a great conversation, there's room for that. And that's what our community is all about.
Is that an online community or something in person?
It's online, and we have monthly membership, and it's a nonprofit. All the revenue goes back into the members, and it's something where my wife and I, another friend of ours who we met in Afghanistan, we're trying to give back to the world and do what we can to in small ways make it a better place.
Okay, that's great. I like that mission. So do you have any advice? I mean, you mentioned already one thing is communication, right? Which in my opinion became a bit difficult today, especially if we have different opinions, right? So I feel that there's a lot of tension today between different ideologies or just opinions, right? So whether they're political or economical or whatever. So what's your advice? How can we navigate better through our modern worlds with all this technology that's certainly in some cases an advantage, but also is like eventually sometimes a burden?
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. I think that we have more time than we think we do. So I think we can slow things down a little bit and realize that we have all this time in our day and take advantage of it in ways that are good for us. So I would say slow things down a little bit. I think that we're also kind of a lot of times taught to strive for perfection, when I actually don't think in this real concrete world we're all walking through, perfection probably doesn't exist. There might be like this perfect thing inside of us, but we shouldn't be striving for perfection in our day-to-day lives, because it doesn't exist. And so just be yourself, and good is great, and great is going to be an outstanding thing. So have some grace for yourself. And I think the most important thing to me that I would tell people is that we aren't taught to love ourselves, right? And so we're taught to look outward a lot and to take care of others and to be strong and be heroes and all this stuff for other people. But really, the most important thing we can do is take care of ourselves first and love ourselves fundamentally and at a really core level before we go out and do anything else, because then we're going to be so much better. But it automatically makes relationships better. It automatically makes all these other things in your life better, and all these other people in your life. We're going to be better off if you take care of yourself, if you love yourself.
I think that's great. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Cool. Okay, John, do you have any last advice you want to give our listeners on the other way, or tell us where the people can find you if they want to learn more about you or your community?
Sure. Our main website is kishar.org. It's kishar.org. That's the entrance to our community. They can link to our socials there. We have one-on-one spiritual guidance and coaching as well. And we have a pretty cool YouTube channel that they can link to. And it's got practical advice on how to kind of live that intersection of your spiritual journey and our day-to-day, you know, life that we're in every day. So check it out.
Okay, that sounds great. And we will link all the sites that you mentioned right now in our show notes. So thank you so much, John, for being with us today and sharing your stories, being open, being vulnerable. I think that's important.
And yeah, thank you for having me on. Like I said, I really appreciate what you're doing and the message that you're putting out there. We need more of it, so it's great.
Thank you. And thank you to all the listeners and people on the screens out there. We see you next week for another episode of The Small Reset. Please don't forget to like and subscribe to our channel. And yeah, if you want to learn more about John, you know where you find him. So have a great day. Thank you. Bye.